Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Did you know that in week one of this season, 12 of the 16 games ended with a one possession score differential? That means 12 of 16 were within 8 points. That's tied for the most one possession games in a single week in NFL history. We've actually seen 12 one possession games 15 times in NFL history. And last year, so 2024, was the only season where there were multiple weeks with 12 games that ended with a one score difference. For a whole season, the highest number of one possession finishes was 156, and that happened in 2022. And the top three seasons in terms of these close finishes have occurred in the past three seasons. Maybe this data is just suggesting football is somehow getting even more fun. So how many close games can we expect this week? This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and let's solve for the remaining 15 NFL games in week two. My week one results are in, and I went 11-5 straight up, 7-8-1 against the spread, and 6-10 on totals. This week, there are four divisional matchups between 0-1 teams, which is tied for the most in week two of any season. The other two seasons where this happened were 1988 and 1995. The Patriots and Dolphins both enter week one without a win for the first time since 2003. Miami are 1.5-point home favorites, and the total is 44 points. In week one against the Colts, Miami just looked off, and the offense specifically looked not in sync. As for Tua, he had 114 passing yards, which is the second fewest in a game since Mike McDaniel became the head coach in 2022. He threw two interceptions, and both were on downfield throws, so 10-plus air yard passes. And he completed just 1 of 6 passes against man coverage. However, one of those was a passing touchdown. We know New England is going to play man defense. Last week against the Raiders, they did it on 46% of the snaps, and this is in line with their over 40% average from last season as well. And as for the skill players, Devon Achane was the only Miami player with over 10 rushing yards or at least 50 scrimmage yards in week one. He had 75 scrimmage yards and a touchdown. Tyreek continued a streak that's maybe not so positive in that he hasn't had a reception of over 30 yards since week one of last season. But it's worth noting that his average against New England is 81.9 receiving yards per game. That's over 10 career games, which happens to be the second most for any player against a team in the Super Bowl era. The Patriots stalled out on offense as well, as they did not score on 7 of their final 8 drives against the Raiders. They had 6 punts, an interception, and 1 field goal. Drake May set career highs with 46 passing attempts and 287 passing yards. He actually leads the NFL with 17 giveaways since becoming the Patriots starter in week 6 of last season. So this naturally prompts a lot of questions about getting the run game going or perhaps targeting shorter passes to help ensure less turnovers. The Patriots defense were missing pieces on the back end, Christian Gonzalez very notably. Now, the front though, they showed promise. They had 4 sacks in week one. And by the way, last season, they had 28 total sacks. That was the fewest in the NFL. They only had 1 game last season where they had at least 4 sacks, and their pressure rate increased from last season's average and in the 1 game sample size by 12.3 percentage points from 28.7 last season, and they were actually at 41% against the Raiders. Bottom line, look for Josh McDaniels to dial up run plays and those signature short passes to running backs that basically approximate a run game, like to rookie Travion Henderson. This will help keep Drake May from turning the ball over. But it's the defense that forecasts the upset in my model. I have New England eking out a win 22-21. The pressure is the difference maker. Speaking of pressure, the biggest underdog of the week is Joe Flacco's squad in his return to face the team that he won a Super Bowl with. The Ravens are favored by 11.5 points, and the total in this one is 45 points. I have two fun facts for you to tell your friends, and they're kind of the same thing, but you'll see what I'm talking about. Number one, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh is 62-34 in games following a loss in his career as a head coach. That's the third best win-loss ratio in NFL history. And number two, Lamar Jackson is 19-4 following a loss in his career as a starter. That includes the playoffs and ties him with Patrick Mahomes for the best win-loss record after a loss since 1970. In their week one loss to the Bills, 32% of the Ravens' offensive plays were big plays, explosive plays. That means 10-plus yards on a rush or 15-plus yards on a pass. That's the highest rate by any team in a game in the last 10 seasons. So let's talk about specifically the run game in this matchup. The Ravens faced a stacked box at the highest rate, almost 20%, in the NFL last season. Against stacked boxes, Derrick Henry, he had 677 of his rushing yards, which is 300 more than any other running back. Just if you're keeping track at home, Saquon was at 319. Henry averaged 6.3 yards per carry. That is the most among running backs. And last season, the Browns stacked the box at the highest rate in the league, 27%, but they allowed the most rushing yards at 668 and the 11th most yards per carry at 3.4. In their Week 18 matchup last season, the Browns stacked the box 38% of the time against the Ravens, yet still allowed 97 yards and 2 touchdowns on 17 such carries. Last week against the Bengals, the Browns used 12 personnel on 36 of their 71 offensive plays. That's 51%. That's a huge increase from last season, where they averaged 16.5% of plays with 2 tight ends on the field. That was also their highest usage of 12 personnel since 2020. Tight ends David Njoku and Harold Fannin Jr. both logged over 70% of the offensive snaps, and they combined for 10 receptions and 100 yards. The matchup here is very interesting, as last season, the Ravens allowed the 8th most yards per dropback against 12, it's 7.7 yards, and they faced the 10th most tight end targets at 127. Additionally, in week one, the Ravens allowed the Bills' tight ends to catch all 7 of their targets for 97 yards and a touchdown. This is why both tight ends appear in my top 15 tight end projections list this week, which of course you can get on numbersgame.me.com. Shameless plug, absolutely. Bottom line in this one, I have the Ravens winning 29-17 in large part because of the advantage Lamar Jackson gives them in the run game. Okay, against the blitz, also in the run game, but I was trying to trick you. It didn't really work. Cleveland blitzed at a 29% rate in week one, and they allowed the second highest success rate when blitzing. It's 63%. And Lamar Jackson, well, he was blitzed on 46% of his dropbacks against the Bills and happened to lead the NFL at a 0.81 EPA per dropback against the blitz last week. This continues a trend that we saw from last season, where he led the entire NFL with a 0.43 EPA per dropback against the blitz. So he's good at it, and that continued like really, really well against the Bills. It's worth noting that the Browns defense had a sub 29% pressure rate in week one. That was actually their second lowest since the start of last season. And the Ravens allowed just 6 pressures to the Bills defense in week one. Myles Garrett, still a problem. 2 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, and 5 pressures against Joe Burrow and company. And he has 5.5 career sacks against Lamar Jackson. Let's go from a game where the quarterback is heading back to the place where he had a lot of success to a game now where the now head coach goes back to the place he was the coordinator and cut his teeth. Yes, I'm talking about when the Bears travel to Detroit to face the Lions. The home team is favored by 5.5 points, and the total in this one, 47 points. In week one, the Lions offense was not good. 3.8 yards per play, which happens to be their fewest since week 6 of 2021. And the Lions rushers, well, they were first contacted behind the line of scrimmage on over 70% of plays. That is the highest rate for Detroit since Dan Campbell became the head coach. Remember, last season, they averaged 6.2 yards per play. They were 3rd in the NFL, with, of course, Ben Johnson orchestrating the offense. Jared Goff had a 4.5 air yard per attempt average in week one, his 6th fewest since joining Detroit in 2021. And Jahmyr Gibbs, despite having a career-high 10 receptions, he only earned 31 receiving yards. That's the fewest receiving yards by a player with 10 or more receptions in a game in NFL history. Aiden Hutchinson was also the only Lions player to record multiple quarterback pressures in week one, and he had two. On the Bears side of things, apart from the scripted start, the offense did not find its rhythm. DeAndre Swift had 17 rushes for only 53 yards. That's a 3.1 yard per attempt average. And they ran play action on just 21% of dropbacks. Goff led the NFL at 37% last season. So what I'm trying to say is maybe some of the tricks that made Ben Johnson so great with the Lions need to be adapted more for this Bears team. Bottom line, I have Detroit getting back on track 28-21 for two main reasons. Number one, when given time, Jared Goff was still successful on downfield passes. He went 5 of 8 for 89 yards and a touchdown on passes of 10-plus air yards. The Bears allowed J.J. McCarthy to go 4 of 8 for 85 yards and two touchdowns on downfield passes in their comeback win. The second reason is the Lions playing man defense. They used man in week one against the Packers on 48% of their coverage dropbacks. That almost is exactly in line with their tendency from last season, where they used it at the highest rate in the league, and that was 47.7%. Since the beginning of last season, they've allowed the fewest EPA per dropback, it's negative 0.25, and the second lowest completion percentage, just 49%, when they use man coverage. As for the matchup here, last season, Caleb Williams recorded a 52.4% completion percentage, 11th lowest, with just 5.7 yards per attempt, 5th fewest against man coverage. Let's move from the NFC North to an NFC East tilt in Dallas, where the Giants come to town as 6-point underdogs and 44.5 total points are forecast. Fun fact that is absolutely not predictive is that Dak Prescott is 4-0 in week two, following a week one loss in his career. He also averages a 102.2 passer rating in those four games. In week one, Prescott was not sacked despite being pressured on 34.3% of dropbacks. He also attempted a deep pass on 18% of his attempts. That was the second highest rate in the NFL. So let's talk about the new addition of George Pickens, who averages 16.2 yards per reception in his career, the second most in the NFL since 2022. Focusing on this matchup, New York allowed a 20.3 completion percentage over expected on deep passes since the start of last season. That's the most in the NFL by 14.3 percentage points. The Giants defense had 3 sacks in week one, and they did it off the third lowest pressure rate last week at just under 22%. On offense, Russell Wilson led the rushing attack with 44 yards on 8 carries. He had a 59.3 passer rating, which happens to be his worst in week one in his 14-season career, and he only attempted one deep pass, which fell incomplete. Wilson was 6 of 16 for 62 yards against man coverage in week one against Washington, and he was pressured on 53% of man dropbacks despite a time to throw of 2.49 seconds. What does this mean? It means the man held off the receivers from getting open effectively. He didn't really have a chance. So part of Russell Wilson having such a low passer rating isn't on him. Dallas played exactly 0 snaps of man in week one against the Eagles. However, defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus will adjust that based on what he saw from the Washington film. Bottom line, the Cowboys offensive line and especially rookie Tyler Booker will have a much harder test than the Jalen Carterless Eagles front last week. But they hold off the G-men long enough for Dak to find the downfield connections to CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. I have Dallas winning 26-19. And yes, I have CeeDee hanging onto the ball and scoring in this one. This is a great spot to show you my weekly confidence numbers for each team, since 3 of the teams we've already talked about fall into the top 5. Baltimore will be the most likely survivor pick, but if you want to save them for a later week, maybe consider the Cowboys or Lions.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Or the team that's the winner of this next game. When the Panthers face the Cardinals in Arizona, the matchup will feature the two shortest number one overall quarterbacks drafted in the common draft era. Both Kyler Murray and Bryce Young are 5'10". Arizona is favored by 6.5 points, and the total is 44.5. Bryce Young was one of three quarterbacks with three giveaways in week one. Tua Tagovailoa and Bo Nix were the other two. And just in general, it was a very rough start for the Panthers. They were without their tackle Ikem Ekwonu, who does forecast to miss the game against this week. Bryce Young had the lowest passer rating, 49, of any starting quarterback, so there's a lot of room to improve. On Carolina's defensive side of the ball, they allowed 200 rushing yards in week one in the loss to Jacksonville. This continues a trend where Carolina allowed 200 or more rushing yards in 8 games last season. No other team allowed more than 3 such games. However, J.C. Horn was a bright spot. He had 1 interception and allowed just 1 reception for 7 yards on 3 targets. As for the Cardinals, Kyler Murray had his 18th career game with 2 or more passing touchdowns and no interceptions in week one. He was also sacked 5 times, which is the most he's ever been sacked in any win. Against the Blitz, he was 8 of 10 for 71 yards and 2 touchdowns, and of course, 0 interceptions. Bottom line, my model picks Arizona to win 27-19 because of the Panthers' lack of pressure. Last week, they had exactly 0 sacks and just an 18.2 pressure percentage, which was the lowest in the NFL. The Rams head to Nashville to face the Titans in a game where the away team is favored by 5.5 points, and the total is forecast at 42 points. In his debut, Cam Ward had some moments where he looked great. Like, for example, passes of under 10 air yards where he went 11 of 13 for 96 yards. Deep passes are an area to look for improvement, though. And yes, it will help to not play the Broncos. But Ward went 1 of 12 for 16 yards on such attempts. And it's worth noting that Calvin Ridley did have 3 drops, which was the most in the NFL last week. And all of those were on those downfield 10-plus air yard passes. Navigating the blitz will also get better for the rookie as well. He started out 0-6 and was sacked 4 times on 10 blitzes against the Broncos. But just so you know, the Rams might not be the area where we start to see that up into the right trajectory, because they blitzed CJ Stroud 8 times, 6 of them were pressures, and 2 turned into sacks. The Titans defense played really well in week one, leading the NFL with 4 takeaways. 2 of them, by the way, were interceptions. Analyzing the Rams' offensive side of things shows that Puka Nacua aligned in the slot on a career-high 64% of routes. And by the way, he's never lined up in the slot on more than 50% of routes in a game before this. He caught 6 receptions and 78 yards from the slot, which were both second most in the NFL. Bottom line, I have the Rams winning by 5, 23-18, in large part because of the side of the ball whose stats I haven't said yet. That would be the Rams' defensive advantage, especially over the Titans' O-line. Last season, Tennessee allowed a 40.2 pressure rate on their quarterbacks, and that trend seems to be continuing. They allowed a 50% pressure rate in week one, and the Rams' defense, they have had a 36% pressure rate since the beginning of last season, which is 8th highest in the NFL. Another West Coast team that's traveling east is the Seattle Seahawks, who head to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. The home team Steelers are field goal favorites, and the total in this one is 40 points. 2 fun facts to tell your friends. 1, the Seahawks are 19-4 in Sunday 1 p.m. Eastern road games since 2018, which is the best rate in the NFL. And 2, Mike McDonald is just 1-3 against the Steelers as the Ravens' defensive coordinator from 2022 to 2023. And all 4 meetings were decided by 1 score. We talked about Aaron Rodgers loving play action and how that works with Arthur Smith and how these two things might go hand in glove. Well, last week we were a little bit right, so we're going to take our victory lap on that. Rodgers was 8 of 10 for 71 yards, and 3 of his 4 touchdowns were on play-action passes against his former team, the Jets. This is his first game with 3 such touchdowns since at least 2016, and he did not attempt a deep pass in week 1 at all. Remember, that's that 20-plus air yarder. The matchup to watch in this one? It's in the trenches. It's the Steelers' left tackle, Broderick Jones, who allowed 5 pressures and 3 sacks against the Jets in week 1. And by the way, last year he played on the right, where he surrendered the 6th highest pressure rate among all right tackles. So who does he have to hold off? Well, Boye Mafe, who aligned on the right edge of the defense on about 62% of his week 1 snaps. That projects the matchup with Jones. Well, Mafe generated 4 pressures on 11 pass rushes. That's a 36.4% pressure rate last week, and that was against Trent Williams. Sam Darnold averaged 9.5 passing yards per attempt when targeting Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and 2.9 passing yards per attempt when targeting anyone else in week 1. JSN had more targets with 13, receptions with 9, and receiving yards at 124 than all the other Seahawks combined. By the way, they had just 7 receptions for 26 yards combined, everyone else. And also JSN aligned wide for a career-high 26 snaps in week one. He also accounted for 83% of their receiving yards and 91% of the team's air yards. That's a lot. Bottom line, in a very close matchup, I have Pittsburgh winning 21-20. One interesting strength on weakness note in this game is Seattle's lack of defensive efficiency when not blitzing and Aaron Rodgers' ability to capitalize on it. The Seahawks had the 9th lowest blitz rate in the NFL since the beginning of last season, and that's 24.3%, and it's a trend that continued into last game, where it was just 16%. They also allowed the most EPA per dropback when they didn't blitz in week one, that was 0.61, and Aaron Rodgers, 0.39 EPA per dropback versus no blitz in week one, that's 5th best in the NFL. It's also a trend that has continued through his career. Next up is a game that I find extremely interesting, maybe even more interesting than I thought ahead of the season. That's the Jaguars at the Bengals, where Cincinnati is favored by 3.5 points, and the total is 49.5 points. Okay, we need the Travis Hunter snap count tracker moment. Ready? He played 45 total snaps in his NFL debut, 39 on offense, 6 on defense. He had a team-high 8 targets, and Trevor Lawrence went 6 of 8 when targeting him, and just 1 of 7 when targeting Brian Thomas. Another change based on having a new head coach, and this will come back to Travis Hunter, is that the Jags used motion on 68% of their snaps in week one. That's an increase from their 2nd lowest motion rate last season. It was just 48%. So they went up 20 percentage points. This is where we saw Travis Hunter being sent in motion 36% of the time. He had 2 receptions for 16 yards and 1 first down when sent in motion. Motion is an interesting mismatch, likely in favor of the Jags, as the Bengals defense allowed 23 completions for 206 yards on plays with motion in week one. The Jags stat line shows 200 rushing yards on 32 attempts. That's a 6.3 yard per rush average against Carolina last week. But when you dig a little bit deeper, they were actually somewhat inefficient against light boxes, which is contrarian because usually you can run better with a light box. Jacksonville had 10 rushes for just 42 yards, so 4.2 yards per rush against light boxes. Travis Etienne specifically, 6 rushes, 21 yards against light boxes, -2 rushing yards over expected per rush against them. So interesting, that's actually the fewest among 23 running backs with at least 5 such carries. This light box situation could become an interesting matchup if the Bengals defense can replicate the success they had against the Browns' ground attack. The Bengals used a light box on 46% of the Browns' rushing attempts. They allowed just 27 yards on those 11 rushes. That's 2.5 yards per rush. Not a great average. The Bengals defense also improved their pressure rate in-game. They generated 0 pressures on 15 dropbacks in the first half against the Browns last week. That's the only game in which they didn't have a pressure in the first half in the last 5 seasons. However, they increased their pressure rate in the second half, registering 17 pressures. That's their most in a second half during the same time frame. Trevor Lawrence completed 15 passes for 131 yards, a touchdown, and 1 interception from a clean pocket against the Panthers in week one, along with 8 first downs. So pressure will be key. Bottom line, did I bait you into thinking the Bengals would lose? How about if I remind you that Cincinnati's offense recorded their lowest explosive play rate, 2%, in a game, and their lowest single game offensive yards per play average at 2.9 since 2020. Did it work? Okay. No, it shouldn't, because I have Cincinnati winning 27-21. Why? Because despite the struggle to get in rhythm on offense, Joe Burrow still threw his touchdown pass to Noah Fant when blitzed. And he also had a 125.6 passer rating when the Browns brought extra rushers, which shows that plan B, C, D, and E all worked well enough when plays broke down. And that brings us to a team that really relied on their MVP quarterback to find plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, maybe all the way to Z last week. And that was Josh Allen and the Bills, who traveled to MetLife to face the Jets. The Bills are 6.5-point road favorites, and the total is 46 points. Listen to this streak. The Bills had 30-plus points in 10 of their last 11 regular season games where Josh Allen had at least 1 pass attempt. The Jets allowed 34 points and had no takeaways in week one, which was a loss at home against the Steelers. Against the Ravens, 3 Bills wide receivers had at least 9 targets. That's Keon Coleman, Khalil Shakir, and Josh Palmer. At least 9 each. The Bills defense allowed the Ravens to rush for 238 yards and 3 rushing touchdowns. That's the most allowed by the Bills in a win since week 6 of 2009. This could be an interesting part of the matchup as the Jets had 182 rushing yards and 3 rushing touchdowns in that week one loss. In his first NFL start, right tackle Armon Membu allowed just a single pressure on 26 pass blocking snaps and a time to pressure of 3.8 seconds. Joe Tippmann, the wily vet now, I guess he's not that old, but he allowed 0 pressures. Justin Fields faced man coverage on 35% of his dropbacks in week one, where he went 5 of 6 for 66 yards, a touchdown with 1 sack taken. This is a trend to watch because under Bobby Babich, the Bills played more man, and in week one, they used it on 41% of snaps. The big key here is handling Josh Allen. Since the start of last season, Josh Allen has increased the number of passes that come out sub 2.5 seconds. It's about 43%. Prior to that, so between 2018 and 2023, it was about 40%. Sounds like 3 percentage points, maybe doesn't sound like a ton, but trust me, it is, especially when he's this precise. His 0.23 EPA per dropback on quick passes is third best in the NFL, and the Jets allowed the 5th most EPA per quick pass since the beginning of last season. They also allowed the 5th most yak per reception to quick passes, and the Bills had the 4th highest percentage of their passing yards coming after the catch at 58%. That was last season, but that should carry into the season as well. Bottom line, I have a big win for the Bills. I don't think they're too tired. I have 28-20. This keeps the Bills' dominance going. Buffalo is 24-6 against AFC opponents since 2020, and they've won 8 of the last 10 matchups with the Jets. Let's play a little game of streak or freak here. So is a player's trend, their streak, real? Or is it just one of those freak coincidences, maybe a function of a very small sample size, and they don't forecast to continue this week? Number one, Bills running back James Cook has 1 or more rushing touchdowns in 5 consecutive games, the longest such streak by a Bills running back since Fred Jackson in 2011. Does he reach pay dirt against the Jets? So my model puts the rushing touchdown odds just under 50%, but then adds in another nearly 20% chance through the air. That combines for 70% of simulations where he scores. Now, I don't mind the risk here because I don't really care. I look at that combined number a little bit more than the explicit one. So I say streak. Number two, this one's a long one, so stay with me. The Ravens offense has rushed for at least 150 yards in 9 consecutive games, including the playoffs. So that's only happened 2 other times, the 1985 Bears and the 2020 to 2021 Ravens. Now, Derrick Henry, let's just give him a few of his flowers. 4 missed tackles in week 1, 72 yards were gained after forcing those missed tackles, which is ridiculous. Also carries on a trend that has kind of been his career trend, but last season he forced 106 missed tackles. That's the second most. 754 yards off of those missed tackles, which was the most. And the matchup. The 2024 Browns allowed opposing ball carriers to force the second most missed tackles, 192. And they generated a league high 1,199 yards after forcing missed tackles. So the question is, will the streak continue that the Ravens top 150 on the ground? And what will Derrick Henry's stat line look like? My model has over 160 yards combined on the ground for just the combination of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson. Henry's at 101 and Jackson's at 63. So this one, massive streak. And number three, Ja'Marr Chase has averaged 90.3 receiving yards per game in games after he's had fewer than 30 receiving yards. Last week, he had 2 catches for 26 yards. So just so you have the full notes here, he's also averaged 8.5 receptions per game, 113 yards, and 1 touchdown in 2 career games against Jacksonville. That is a tiny sample size, but it's still kind of cool. So which streak holds? My model says 93 yards and a score for Chase. I say the bounce back is real. That's a streak. And I wouldn't put him past exceeding that 113 yard mark, but I'm going with the bounce back is a streak. Those were streaks of good fortune. Now let's talk about the Niners, whose injury situation seems to be a stroke of bad luck again this season. George Kittle already on IR, and then Brock Purdy is not going to play, which was added about midweek. This after we already know other injuries to their wide receiving core. San Francisco is still favored by a field goal against the Saints in New Orleans, and the total here is 40.5. Brock Purdy, who's not going to play, was pressured on 61% of dropbacks in week one's win against Seattle. That is the highest by any quarterback in week one and the highest by any Niners quarterback since at least 2018. So maybe Mac Jones won't be in that situation. As for the 49ers offense overall, the left side of the offensive line allowed 17 of Purdy's 23 total pressures faced. That means Trent Williams, he allowed 10. Ben Bartsch, he allowed 7. Those 10 by Trent Williams were the most by any player in week one and the most allowed by Williams in any game since we've been tracking with next-gen stats. So that is possibly something that can change in this one. Christian McCaffrey led the NFL with 31 touches in week one, and he was actually the only player with 60 or more rushing yards and 60 or more receiving yards in the entire NFL in week one. The Saints' offensive tackles were responsible for 8 of the team's 12 pressures allowed in their week one game against the Cardinals. Left tackle Kelvin Banks, he gave up 2 pressures. Right tackle Talisa Fuaga allowed 4 pressures before his third quarter injury forced him to leave the game, and his replacement gave up 2 more pressures. Spencer Rattler now falls to 0-7 in his career as the starter, and Alvin Kamara averages under 67 scrimmage yards per game in those 4 games with Rattler as a starter. It's 66.8. But on defense, Cam Jordan has 4.5 sacks in the last 5 games. 2 of his 3 pressures in week 1 were actually unblocked, and one of those turned into a sack. Bottom line, I still have the Niners pulling us off with Mac Jones. I saw him in the preseason, the Broncos, who I spend the preseason with, played the Niners, and it is all about doing what Kyle Shanahan tells him to do. The score 21-20 reflects the numbers valuing the Niners' defensive front as the strongest unit in this matchup. Tracking Nick Bosa this season will be fun. Last week, he lined up on the right edge about 61% of the time and on the left edge about 39% of the time. He only had 2 total pressures across 20 pass rushes, so just a 10% rate. However, one of those did turn into a sack. But my reason in bringing this up is now, as a veteran, Bosa, who is a guy who absolutely hunts down quarterbacks, he's a guy who finished the season last year with 61 pressures, which was 11th most among edge rushers. But my point is they have some changes along that defensive front, and his ability to line up everywhere changes the space for everyone else, which probably indicates that his value as a rusher from all different angles is more useful and more strategically deployed than just like go hunt the quarterback in this specific spot. So for me, this means Nick Bosa, we probably need to create some like assist metric. I've been looking at how the changing of space affects everyone else. So let's just look for his assists in this one too. Defense drives this next outcome as well when the Denver Broncos head to Indianapolis to take on the Colts, where they are road favorites by 2.5 points, and the total is 42.5 points. Week one was the first time Denver committed 4 giveaways and scored 20 or fewer points, and won since 1992. Bo Nix had a rough outing to start his sophomore campaign, but the running backs, a focal point for Sean Payton and company this offseason, were a positive change. They combined for 133 rushing yards after averaging sub 84 per game last season, which ranked 23rd. And they had 2 running backs with 60 or more rushing yards for the first time since 2021. The Colts are looking to start 2-0 for the first time since 2009 when they finished 14-2. Peyton Manning won MVP that season, and they lost in the Super Bowl to New Orleans, Sean Payton's team. Against the Dolphins, Indianapolis scored on each of their 7 possessions. They are the only team since 1991 to score on every possession in a game. Rookie tight end Tyler Warren led the Colts with 7 receptions. He also earned 76 yards. Those 7 grabs are tied for the most by a rookie tight end in week 1 in NFL history. Do you know who he's tied with? Harold Fannin Jr. of the Browns. Both of them happened this season. Next Gen Stats shows that his 50 snaps played, the alignments broke down like this. 33 at tight end, 9 in the slot, 6 out wide, and 2 in the backfield. But here's what matters most for this game. It's Daniel Jones under pressure. Jones was pressured on just 24% of dropbacks in week 1 against Miami, where he went 5 of 6 for 74 yards, had a passing touchdown, and earned a 157.6 passer rating. Now, Denver's defense leads the NFL with 69 sacks and a 38% pressure rate since the beginning of last season. They had 6 sacks in week 1. 6 different players each had a sack. That's so interesting. And Daniel Jones, passer rating of 68.2 when pressured since 2020, ranks 29th among 33 qualified quarterbacks. So which version of Daniel Jones do we get? The one that could beat the Miami pressure or the one that had a hard time against other pressure? Bottom line, defensive coordinator for the Colts, Lou Anarumo, had a great game plan against the Dolphins. But as of right now, Charvarius Ward, one of their dynamic free agents, is still in the concussion protocol, which is a big loss to that secondary. My score projection, 23-18, reflects that my model has the Broncos defense driving the win. Other than the six sacks from six different guys, which is awesome, let's add that Pat Surtain lined up outside across from Calvin Ridley on 27 of 34 coverage snaps in week one. This will make things very tough on whoever wants to align in his coverage. Michael Pittman, Alec Pierce, or even A.D. Mitchell, all of whom aligned outside and at least 60% of their week one snaps. Two other 1-0 teams, this time both in the AFC West, square off in the late time slot on Monday night in Las Vegas. The Chargers face the Raiders on Pete Carroll's birthday and odds makers. So I guess Vegas, very reflexive. Anyways, the Chargers are favored by 3.5 points, and the total in this one is 47 points. Just as a reminder, the Chargers won both matchups against the Raiders in 2024 by double digits. Last week, Justin Herbert was really good, as in 169 yards off play action, 150 yards and two touchdowns to the intermediate level. In breakers worked. It was coming together really nicely for him. One strength versus strength matchup to watch here, cover three. As in, Justin Herbert averaged 9.5 yards per pass attempt, the fourth most, and earned a league-leading 121.3 passer rating when facing cover three last season. Against the Chiefs this past Friday, when they played cover three, he completed 6 of 9 for 109 and a touchdown. Now the Raiders, they used cover three more than any other scheme last season. They did it on 33% of their defensive snaps. That was eighth most league-wide, and they were good when doing so. They held opponents to 7 yards per attempt, the seventh fewest, and a 3-4 touchdown interception ratio. On the Raiders' offensive side of the ball, Geno Smith has the best completion percentage in revenge games in the Super Bowl era at 67.4%. One tough task in this matchup is how good the Chargers are in the red area. They led the NFL with a 45% opponent red zone touchdown percentage in 2024. As for Ashton Jeanty, he played 86% of snaps in his debut. That was actually the third highest among all running backs. Now, 6 of his rushing attempts went for negative yards, and he only was afforded 0.2 yards before contact per rush. That was the third fewest among all rushers in week one. Look for this to change. The one thing that really worked for the Raiders, though, 12 personnel, as in 8.1 yards per attempt, and both touchdowns happened when there were two tight ends, any combination of two tight ends. So Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, or even Ian Thomas. Bottom line, my model has the Chargers winning 23-20, and Justin Herbert using play action is a key. His 32.2% play action rate is only topped by Jared Goff since the beginning of last season. We talked about that earlier. He also has a 0.3 EPA per play action dropback over that time frame. That's the fourth most in the NFL. He also averages 10.3 yards per play using play action. That's third most in the NFL. And the Raiders, they allowed tied for the 9th highest success rate to play action dropbacks. Last week, it was 56%. And last season, they allowed the 10th most EPA per play to play action. All these numbers to prove that play action is a positive for Justin Herbert, and it is still a question mark for the Raiders. Did some of their free agent acquisitions help them to defend such passes? This is a great spot for two top end touchdowns and one top tier guy that could be in a bad situation. The idea is to give two high probability player touchdowns and one situation that could be a little bit dicey. So a top tier guy like last week, your Ja'Marr Chase, last week, your AJ Brown, those kind of guys who are in a bad situation, maybe just for this 1 week time frame. First, the two guys who are in a good situation. Number one, Jahmyr Gibbs against the Bears. The Lions offense was not in rhythm against the Packers. We already talked about this. It was bad. But Jahmyr Gibbs still managed to have the lone explosive rush of over 10 yards, like for the whole team. The Bears defense allowed 2 such runs to Jordan Mason and 5 successful runs, which was 1/3 of his attempts. The game script for the Vikings was not really favorable for the ground game either. So Gibbs to the end zone feels like a great way to get the bad taste of that Packers loss out of the Lions' mouths. Number two, Brian Thomas Jr. against the Bengals. I know he scored a rushing touchdown in week one, but it was not the receiving outing that we all expected. I will say, in tracking this game and listening to his head coach, his results were not really on the pass catcher, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. So getting Trevor Lawrence and BTJ on the same page will be a focus this week, especially against a team that was extremely vulnerable to downfield passes last season, and they roll out a secondary that's hard to make a case forecast to be much better this season. And the top tier guy that's in kind of a bad situation, well, it's Bucky Irving against the Houston Texans. Why? Well, the Bucs O-line is kind of being shuffled around like a lot, and you know that this Houston Texans team is going to bring a lot of pressure. So would you think run would be a good prescription? Yes, but in the red area, I do not think that they will have as good of luck getting Bucky Irving into the end zone. So I still think it forecasts to be passes for the Tampa Bay Bucs. Moving on to the Sunday nighter in Minneapolis, where the Falcons come to town. The Vikings are favored by 3.5 points, and the total is 44.5 points. Fun fact here, obviously these storylines are abound, but J.J. McCarthy in Michigan defeated Michael Penix Jr. in Washington 34-13 in the 2024 College Football Playoff National Championship. A lot has happened since then, but you will hear that stat over and over again. You can be first cure friends with that info, though. Let's do a little digging on who Penix Jr. is now. Okay, in 4 games, he's had 4 passing touchdowns and no interceptions when facing zone. He's had 0 passing touchdowns and 3 interceptions against man. That's in his 4-game huge career. Minnesota played zone on 38 of 43 dropbacks against Chicago in week 1. That is high. And they also have the highest blitz rate in the NFL since 2023 at 46%. Penix averaged 6.5 passing yards per attempt with no passing touchdowns and 1 interception against the blitz. So he has some favorable splits when it comes to man versus zone, and maybe a little bit more. Who knows what's going to happen against the blitz. Now for the giant 1-game sample size on J.J. McCarthy. He happens to be the first starting quarterback to come back from a 10 or more point deficit in the fourth quarter of an NFL debut since Steve Young in 1985. He'll actually be the first quarterback since at least 1950 to make his first 2 career starts in primetime in weeks 1 and 2 of a season as well. Pretty fun. Bottom line, I have Minnesota winning 24-21. They keep it closer, as in the Falcons keep it closer, for 2 main reasons. Number 1, they have upped their pressure rate. We saw it last week. And number 2, Michael Penix looked good against the blitz last week, the Todd Bowles blitz, which is a little bit different. He went 9-13 for 128 yards and a touchdown against the blitz against the Bucs last week. So it is not fully formed. We don't have steady data on who Michael Penix is against the blitz yet, but that's why I think that they keep it closer. Plus, Darnell Mooney is likely to be back. The Falcons narrowly lost to the Bucs last week, so let's move on to Tampa's matchup this week in Houston with the Texans. This is the first Monday nighter in the doubleheader. It's going to be a great way to start off the Monday evening. Houston's favored by 2.5 points at home, and the total is 42.5. The Bucs are 1-5 all time against the Texans, and by the way, they've lost 5 straight, and Tampa has never won a game at Houston. Baker Mayfield is also 0-6 on Monday night since 2020. That's 1-7 in his career total ahead of 2020. I'm just telling you all this stuff. Am I fleecing you or do I think that they lose? We'll see here. The headline in this one is pressure. And Baker Mayfield was pressured on 41% of his dropbacks in week 1, his second highest pressure rate in a game since the start of last season. I told you about the shuffle with the offensive line. That could be dicey. He also averaged a time to throw of 2.95 seconds last week. Last season, the Buccaneers' offensive line allowed the second lowest pressure rate in the NFL. It was just 26%. So big difference year over year so far. In week 1, the Texans generated 10 pressures on 32 dropbacks. That's a 31% rate. And that includes 3 sacks. Last season, they generated the second highest pressure rate. It's 38%. For the Texans' offense, C.J. Stroud was pressured on 14 of his 34 dropbacks. That's 41%. He was sacked 3 times, took 7 hits. That was against the Rams. And when he was under pressure, he completed 9 of 10 for 102 yards. That was an uptick from last season. The Bucs generated 20 pressures on 46 dropbacks. That's a 44% rate in week 1. And 5 Bucs defenders generated multiple pressures, led by Hassan Reddick, who had 7, including 3 that came in under 2.5 seconds. Stroud was 1 of 2 for 23 yards with no touchdowns and an interception with a 52.1 passer rating on deep pass attempts in week 1. So that could be an area where it doesn't really work so well for them. Now let's look at Stroud versus zone. He has 9 passing touchdowns with 11 interceptions against zone coverage since the beginning of last season, and Tampa plays zone 84% of their dropbacks last season, the second highest rate, but they only played it in 59% of opponent dropbacks in week 1, still a very high rate. They will likely uptick that against Stroud. In the one time that Stroud has faced the Bucs before, that was week 9 of 2023 at home, he had career highs with 470 passing yards, 5 passing touchdowns, a 147.8 passer rating. That is a one game sample size, but still he fared very well, but it's not super predictive, more just something you can tell your friends. Bottom line, I have the Bucks pulling off the upset 22-20 in Houston. Did I trick you by telling those stats before that made it seem like I wasn't going to go there? That was my goal. It's all about jokes. Anyways, why do I have the Bucks winning? Well, you already know that the Bucks offense is going to have to withstand whatever pressure that the Houston Texans are going to throw at them. They know that. Perhaps they get Chris Godwin back. Bucky Irving will help in the run game. Their tight ends will help. You'll see those in-breaking routes that you saw to Mika Egbuka, etc. Mike Evans, all of those things will be in play for them. Baker Mayfield already knows how to handle some of the pressure coming his way. On the other side, though, the uptick in pressure from the Bucs defensive front is going to be a problem for an O-line that did not show me that they were better than my preseason rankings in week one. It's not a reliable O-line, so I think the pressure from the Bucs changes the capacity for Houston to be able to score, and the Tampa Bay side of things just narrowly sneak past them. Which means it's weekly wild card time. Our list of three lesser expected touchdowns sort. Which means it's weekly wildcard time. Our list of three lesser expected touchdown scores. I'm talking about guys who aren't necessarily the top few at their position, guys you didn't draft in round one of your fantasy league, players who have elevated end zone reaching odds this particular week. Number one, Omarion Hampton against the Raiders. The rookie had six successful rushes and one explosive against the Chiefs in week one. Now, while the Raiders' new linebackers, Devin White, Jermaine Pratt, and Jamal Adams, combined for five run stuffs against the Pats, I still think that Omarion Hampton and the tricks that Jim Harbaugh has up his sleeves means end zone for the rookie. Number two, Javonte Williams against the Giants. I was wrong about his use, and choosing him here is not just me admitting that it went a whole lot better than I expected. Hats off to Clayton Adams, amazing game plan. But also, in this matchup, running right at the best part of New York's defense is the prescription. And number three, Hollywood Brown against the Eagles, which brings us to our final, but certainly not least important game, perhaps the most important game of the entire week, at least most interesting, the rematch of Super Bowl 59. The Eagles travel to Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs, who are looking to not only avenge their Super Bowl loss, but now their week one loss as well. Philadelphia is favored by 1 point at Arrowhead, meaning they are road favorites by 1 point, and the total in this one is 47 points. Hurts and Mahomes each led their teams in rushing yards in their season openers. Hurts had 62 and two rushing touchdowns. Mahomes had 57 and just one rushing touchdown. Jalen Hurts had 171 rushing yards and six rushing touchdowns in the last three games versus the Chiefs, which includes the playoffs, aka Super Bowl, and he's had a rushing touchdown in three straight games against Kansas City. The Chiefs' defense has allowed 615 rushing yards to opposing quarterbacks. That is tied for the most in the NFL over that span. The scouting report on Saquon reminds us that Kansas City held him to 57 rushing yards on 25 carries in the Super Bowl, and he had just 60 rushing yards in week one against Dallas. Kansas City allowed 90 total rushing yards in week one, but no individual rusher had more than 50. Stop me if you've heard the summer before, but A.J. Brown only had one target, and it came with 1 minute and 51 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. The target was actually on Hurts' last pass attempt of the game, which is very interesting. He now has three or fewer receptions in five of his last six games, which includes the playoffs. The notes to know on Philadelphia's defense include reminding us that they had six sacks and 16 pressures of Mahomes in the Super Bowl, and they didn't blitz him even once all game. Also worth noting, the Eagles' run stuff rate nearly doubles when Jalen Carter's on the field at 21% versus off at 11%. That's last season. So that's an interesting one, and we didn't get any information on him last game, obviously. Patrick Mahomes is 19-4 in a game after a loss in his career. We talked about this with Lamar Jackson, who he's tied with. That is the highest win percentage for any quarterback, and the two of them are tied, since 1970. So remember, Patrick Mahomes after a loss, not likely to lose. The Chiefs' starting offensive tackles combined to commit six penalties for 40 yards in week one. Those types of things are not likely to repeat, especially with a Hall of Fame quarterback like Andy Reid. Bottom line, I have the Chiefs pulling it off 23-22. Just so you know, Kansas City had the third highest shotgun rush rate in week one and the seventh most yards when they rushed from the shotgun, 66 yards, a 6.6 average because it was on 10 rushes. And Philadelphia allowed the ninth most rushing yards over expected to shotgun rushes since 2024. Philadelphia also allowed 9.3 yards to shotgun rushes in week one. So that kind of is in line with what happened last season. That was, by the way, the second most in the NFL for just that 1 week sample. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten good for six. Six menu notes my model has occurring in over 50% of simulations, and they are in order of blandest to spiciest. Number one, Christian McCaffrey to score a touchdown against the Saints. The San Fran Swiss Army Knife projects for 121 scrimmage yards in my model, and though I think avoiding the rushing total is smart here, as historically he's averaged just 3.4 yards per carry against the Saints, which is his fewest versus any opponent that he's faced at least two times. So just so you know here, my model has more than 34.5 receiving yards, but fewer than 85.5 rushing. It doesn't really matter because I'm talking about touchdowns here, and his end zone reaching odds are at 83% in my models. Number two, Jaxon Smith-Njigba to earn more than 68.5 receiving yards against the Steelers. The Seattle receiver lined up out wide. We talked about this 62% of the time. He saw 59% of the team targets, 91% of their air yard share. We get it. This is the sixth highest air yard share by a receiver in a game since at least 2016. The result was 124 yards. Well, why does that forecast to go forward since no one else really shared the love last week? Well, if you look at the injuries, corner Joey Porter Jr. left with an injury last week that shifted things around. Darius Slay, Jalen Ramsey, they were forced to be in positions they weren't typically planning on playing. This means there's a good path for JSN to again be the answer this week. Number three, Drake May to rush for more than 25.5 yards. He had only 7 yards on the ground last week against the Raiders, but the New England quarterback led the NFL in rushing yards off of scrambles with 395 from weeks 6 to 18 of last season. Especially to escape the Dolphins' blitz, which you know Anthony Weaver will dial up. He did it on 52% of dropbacks last week. These scrambles might be the way to keep him from turning the ball over. Number four, Devon Achane to have fewer than 4.5 receptions against the Patriots. The Miami running back leads all running backs with 81 receptions, 612 receiving yards, and 7 receiving touchdowns since 2024. However, New England's defense allowed 2 receiving yards to running backs in week one, the fewest in the NFL, and this is a Mike Vrabel principle, and my model says no more than 3 catches is his most likely outcome. Number five, Trey McBride to score a touchdown against the Panthers. Last week, the Arizona tight end, who the offense runs through, caught 6 passes for 61 yards in the Cardinals' week one win over the Saints. Of those 61 receiving yards, 52 of them came against zone. This continues a 2024 season trend where he had 866 receiving yards and a total of 41.5 receiving EPA against zone coverage. That is massively high. Both were the second most in the NFL at the position. The Panthers defense allowed 8.9 yards per attempt to tight ends in zone coverage last season, third most in the league. The yardage total is only set at 60.5. That is safe. It is bland. I prefer the spicier touchdown. And number six, Aaron Rodgers to pass for more than 1.5 touchdowns against the Seahawks. The Pittsburgh quarterback needs just 2 passing touchdowns to pass the Hall of Famer Brett Favre at 508 for 4th place on the all-time passing touchdowns list. Remember, 3 of his 4 touchdowns were using play action, and Seattle's defense allowed a 75% completion percentage and 13 touchdowns since the beginning of last season to play action passes. Okay, this was very long, and I think I want to go deeper on a few games. So why don't we talk about, and let me know how you feel, about applying the numbers game rigor to 3 games. So we'll pick maybe TNF and 2 of the more marquee games and do just like we did for TNF. So like a 10-minute-ish little mini pod, and then go faster on maybe some of the less marquee games. Let's try that for a week. How about you guys let me know next week if you like that? And we'll go forward from there. I appreciate all of the feedback. I want to make this as great as possible, most useful for you, mostly entertaining for you. You know, the background is back. I'm listening. We're here. It's good. I got my chest piece. We're all great here, but I really appreciate all of the feedback and all of our time spent together. So I'm just trying to make it even more fun and more useful. So I think like the three little breakdown or the three mini breakdowns and then one longer one, but that's way faster. Let me know if that sounds like a good idea. And as always, thank you so much for hanging out. Remember to follow, like, subscribe, download the new pod versions. They're everywhere you get pods. And go to the Numbers Game site, numbersga.me, where player projections are updated every Wednesday so you don't miss a single number and so we can hang out all season. Thanks so much again, and I will see you next week. Enjoy the football!